Hello, and welcome to this episode of ESG Talk, your go-to source for insights and advice from leaders in environmental, social, and governance. I'm your host, Andy Wood. Today, we're welcoming Garrett Quinn, the Chief Sustainability Officer at Smurfit Kappa Group, one of the world's largest packaging companies. And joining Garrett is Bob Eccles, one of the world's leading authorities on integrated reporting and sustainable business. Bob is a visiting professor of management practice at the Said Business School at the University of Oxford. Bob also joined us last season to chat about the evolving role of the CSO. Today, we will be discussing the sustainability commitments shaping the future of Smurfit Kappa, including its early adoption of nature-related disclosures and the keys to achieving goals ahead of schedule. Garrett and Bob, welcome to the show, and thank you very much for joining us.
A pleasure. Good to see you.
Good to be here.
Fabulous. So, Garrett, you've been a Chief Sustainability Officer for nearly 3 years now. And before that, however, you were Head of Investor Relations at Smurfit Kappa. So how did that previous role prepare you for what you do today as a Sustainability Officer?
I think it was listening to a key stakeholder in our business, being investors. I guess I was head of IR from 2016 to 2021. And during that period, you went from a place of where sustainability wasn't really part of the investor conversation to started to change probably around 2020. And 2020 and 2021 really started to rock and roll, where you went from, I suppose, maybe in the earlier part of my time as investor relations, it was all about, has the market mispriced you? Is there upside in your revenue or your EBITDA? And of course, that's logical. But what they weren't doing is doing the due diligence on, you know, I can see one of your assets is in a water stress area. Talk me through how you're managing that. And so you could see how the sophistication of investors and generalist investors, as well as ESG investors, was certainly increasing. I would say through COVID, it looks like a lot of people upskilled was the general sense I got. And you could see how the inflows during that period was all into ESG funds. So lots of money to allocate. We saw opportunity that we have a good story to tell, and we could tell it even better. And that's why the role of CSO was created, to try and build on that opportunity.
So you'd say it was that experience in interacting and listening to the way the investor questions were changing was one of the things that helped you prepare for where you are now.
Yes. And I'd say probably building on, and I know it might sound a little bit cliche, but building on the values and the culture of the business as well. Like, there was a leadership buy-in. It wasn't just a kind of business opportunity. It was that, as well as believing that we should be able to do bigger and better things in this space.
So, speaking of the role of the CSO, Bob, you've done some very interesting and very impressive research that's been looking at how CSOs are now directly interacting with investors, how they're helping set corporate strategy and so on. According to one of Workiva's surveys, we did a benchmark survey on integrated reporting, institutional investors remain steadfast on ESG. The numbers we got were that 82% were indicating they haven't altered their investment decision-making despite the recent criticism of ESG practices. So how would you say, given that combination, that a company benefits from having a CSO who is comfortable talking to investors?
You do see sort of an increasing awareness on the part of the investment community. But Garrett is an unusual CSO, to be honest. I mean, I met Garrett when I was doing research for an article in the Harvard Business Review with Allison Taylor called The Evolving Role of CSOs. And so what we saw, and you saw this particularly in challenging industries, if you've got a sophisticated company and you've got someone in the CSO role that's got senior management support and has a background like Garrett did in investor relations so that they can engage with the investors and talk about what they're doing around sustainability in terms that investors can understand, I think that's really a clear asset. I mean, that's not what the norm is out there, and we can get into that later. So sort of the ideal CSO would be someone that understands both the sustainability issues, the material ones, how they connect to the company's strategy, connect to capital allocation, and can explain that in an integrated way. When you're doing that, I think, you know, the pro-ESG, the anti-ESG stuff is a little bit of background noise, because you've got people thinking ESG is going to save the world, and you've got people thinking that ESG is the devil incarnate, and neither one is true. And so getting this sort of more pragmatic approach to sustainability in a company focusing on the material issues for value creation. That's what I think is key. But as I said, unfortunately, that's still not the norm that we see out there in the world of CSOs today.
Yeah, and speaking actually of sustainability, Garrett, sort of to turn back to you, your Smurfit Kappa's ESG commitments are aligned with several of the UN's sustainable development goals. I actually prefer the term sustainability to ESG, but that's possibly my background and my location. So why do you think it's important to you to report your progress within that framework of those very broad SDGs?
Well, I think it makes it more holistic. And I think also beyond just looking at ES and G and maybe being more in that financial end of things, capital market end of things, the SDG really prompts you to be more rounded, to look at where you're having impact on society. And also what I think which is really encouraging, and it's something Bob and I have compared notes on in the past, is it's a framework. Yeah, and a framework is trying to help you demonstrate what good looks like, and then ideally what you do is you evolve over time and you try and keep improving on how you disclose. And I think I have a colleague of mine, Oti Marin, who really got into the weeds on how to report against the SDGs and worked with the guidance that was provided by the World Business Council for Sustainable Development, the WBCSD, where they have provided guidance for our sector. And I think what's nice, I suppose, is it kind of quite a mature approach, because it's been really clear on where you have impact, be it positive or negative. And of course, sometimes you don't want to talk about the negative. You want to just talk about the positive. And I guess that's what it's trying to say, is you need to be balanced. And then also you need to be clear on where you genuinely have impact. And so there's a risk or a temptation that you want to say, well, all the SDGs are important. Therefore, you know what, we're just going to focus on all of them. And you know, if you try and do that, you're going to fall over. So that's, what the framework and the WBCSD guidance helped us is to say, right, how can we get clear on where we do genuinely have impact? Where we then would say, right, we may not have impact, but we think we have a part to play. So we'd call that contributing. And then the last bit being how we support. So we think, look, the business probably has limited impact on it, but we do acknowledge them and support them as being important.
So you mentioned there looking at impact and being able to clearly communicate that impact. And something that you've done quite recently at Smurfit Kappa is announced that you've actually achieved 4 of your midterm sustainability targets and ahead of schedule, which I would say is quite rare. So congratulations. But if we sort of dive into that a little bit more for our listeners. So 2 of those targets were on environmental aspects, and the other 2 were around social initiatives. So how did you put together an approach for meeting those commitments? And did that help you do the final outcome of achieving those goals ahead of schedule?
Yeah, well, I guess, yeah, if you wanted to be a cynic, you could say set your targets low enough, it's easy to achieve them. So what we'd like to think, and for those who know us and follow us, we didn't achieve all our targets early. We're still on track. We achieved some of them early. And so, yes, we're proud of what we've achieved so far. We know we've still got a job to do on a couple of others. And then our climate one is 2030. So it's that little bit further out. How do we choose them? It was through materiality process. How do we try and understand what an appropriate metric is for those material topics? And then what is the art of the possible? So what can we actually do? What's the potential achievement of it? By when? And, you know, just to try and prove that it wasn't just kind of soft targets, if you look at the environmental targets that we have, which are involved in our the cost of our funding in our revolving credit facility, we haven't achieved all of them. I think we've got a good balance of stretching targets. We've achieved some of them. We've got a little bit of work to do on water, but right on track, because we know we've got investments coming online to achieve those. And then critically, what you need to be doing with your stakeholders is being upfront and saying on topic X, we're doing okay, and this is how we did it. And on topic Y, we might be behind, and this is what we're doing to make sure that we hit our target.
Yeah, so some good communication and planning there by the sounds of things. So Bob, if we sort of continue on this theme, at Green Biz Conference recently, you were on a panel discussing the gaps between commitments and operational realities. So what would you say, sort of given this discussion so far, how does that play into generating sustainable value creation, sort of this idea of those commitments and the journey to those commitments?
Okay, Andy, here's the deal. I turned 73 in 2 days, and so I've never been very good at following directions. So let me not answer your question for the moment, and I promise I will answer it, because you prompted me to want to address a couple of issues that I think are important. You said you prefer the word sustainability to ESG, and then Garrett has been using the word impact. And I think it's important to think about how these are all related to each other. All ESG really is, you know, from the original UN Global Compact report, Who Cares Wins, what are these material issues? Garrett used the term materiality. I was the founding chair of the Sustainability Accounting Standards Board. It's like, what are those material, environmental, social, and governance issues that matter to value creation? Sustainability, I think we need to think about at two levels of analysis. There's the sustainable strategy of a company to continue to generate returns over the long term. Then there's sustainability for the world that we all live in, which gets to impact, which Garrett was talking about. And that's really a more external facing thing. That's the positive and negative externalities of a company, particularly in terms of its products and services. And I think Garrett is right to say you need to have a materiality focus. You can't do everything. So these are the seven SDGs that they're focused on. And so they're really doing both things. When you look at Smurfit Kappa, they're paying attention to those material ESG issues that matter to them in terms of value creation. But they're also thinking about what are the positive externalities that their products and services are creating in the world through the lens of the SDGs. And I think that's become a very useful framing. And I think people tend to confound those things, the ESG integration and then the impact. And I think it's important to keep them separate. To answer your question, what we did is, so as I said, we interviewed 29, 30 CSOs, and often in challenged industries, we interviewed a bunch of asset managers and created sort of a picture of what we think the CSO role needs to be going forward in the future. And then we decided to see, well, how does that compare to what general practices are? So we did a global survey of about 220, mostly CSOs, a few CFOs and chief technology officers. And it was really quite striking, the gaps that you see. Around 97% all said, you know, the typical thing, you know, sustainability is important to value creation. So, you know, we've all taken the pledge and sustainability is good, and we're all feeling good about ourselves. But then when you kind of drill into it a little bit, it's really quite striking. You have only 37% saying sustainability is very integrated into the corporate strategy. Only 50% say the top management teams pay much attention to sustainability risks, opportunities, and impact. 20% say that there's enough capital allocation going to the sustainability issues. So between the words and deeds, there's some big differences, and we can get into some more. I think one of them, and I forget the numbers, was everybody agreed that having quality data for sustainability reporting, I think the ISSB and the CSRD will contribute to that. But, you know, a very small percentage thought that they had the systems in place that they needed to be able to produce this data. So the distance between good intent and what actual practice is pretty vast and needs to be addressed.
So, thank you, Bob. That's really interesting. So we've spoken a lot there about how to operationalize things. And Smurfit Kappa, now this is related, I promise, is one of the early adopters of the Task Force for Nature-Related Financial Disclosures, one of only 180 companies to do so. And that is because nature is one of those very material operational topics to Smurfit Kappa. So in particular, though, why was it important for you to share that information about your nature-related disclosures and impacts in addition to the climate-related disclosures and impacts?
As you rightly alluded to, Andy, that includes a lot to do with nature. So without trees, you can't make paper. Without water, you can't make paper. We also, on the opportunity side, we see that our product is, which basically cardboard boxes, in simple terms, is a very opportunity-based product for the move away from less sustainable packaging materials. So we saw how we also had time-bound targets already in our management incentives, in our cost of funding, and they were linked to nature-related targets. So a lot of what TNFD is advocating that you do, we're already doing. And I guess that's the primary comfort, I suppose, we had in becoming an early adopter, is because you say, well, hang on, we're already doing this. And dare I sound like a broken record, it's a framework. So it's not about being 100% compliant in day one. It's about saying, right, how are you looking? What can you complete on day one? And then how are you going to try and improve it year on year? And we could see also an opportunity, to be honest, as well, because we could see that investors wanted companies that were progressing in this area. And funnily enough, we kind of thought, but we already disclosed this. So what are we doing wrong that is not maybe coming across the agenda of our investors, our prospective investors? So I guess the TNFD was a window to make sure that once we start disclosing in line with it, that people can very clearly see where we are already doing this and we intend on building on it.
Yeah, I think that progress is important. We talk a lot about the concept of transition plans with regard to climate, but of course, there's also the idea of transition plans with regard to biodiversity and lots of other topics. That whole roadmap of actions plus goals at the end, I think sometimes we overuse terminology and try and sort of hide what it is we're talking about. I mean, we're just talking about planning how to move towards certain targets. So we touched there briefly on the fact that it's a framework and that makes a difference and it matters. And so, Bob, you've stressed before the importance of understanding that sustainability frameworks are different from reporting standards and that this is going to be quite important soon. So could you explain why this difference matters for companies as they navigate sustainability reporting?
So happy to. Let me just put in a shout out for the TNFD people, because what they did that was very smart, I've written about this a little bit, is the basic framework from the TCFD, they essentially adopted that. So you're not going to have competing frameworks, because the TCFD framework was incorporated into the ISSB, was incorporated into the CSRD. I was involved in starting the International Integrated Reporting Council. That was a framework, a different framework. We were always very clear that this was essentially the overall architecture for what the reporting was going to be. The standards are, what are the particular metrics that you're using to report on an item of some kind? And you need to have your organizing framework first. The analogy I would draw to financial statements is you have the income statement and the balance sheet. So for sustainability reporting, our underlying framework is essentially coming out of the TCFD and now the TNFD. And then what you see happening with the ISSB and with the CSRD is they're filling in that framework with what the particular standards are. Just again, making the analogy to financial reporting, is it IFRS, is it US GAAP? Now we have kind of ISSB, we have CSRD. Garrett used the term double materiality. That's CSRD. ISSB is single or financial materiality. Both groups have the same definition of financial materiality. This is kind of related to ESG, those things that affect value creation. I think what you can establish there with the ISSB then is the global baseline. Then the CSRD has 12 standards, ISSB has 2. And ideally what I'd like to see happen is the ISSB develops their standards as you get the term people are using is interoperability, so that you can, between ISSB and then the Global Reporting Initiative is really the impact materiality. They're collaborating together. And I think between, and this is what corporations and investors should be pushing for, these three organizations all doing important work, ISSB, the European, you know, it's called the Sustainability Reporting Board under EFRAG for ESRS, European Sustainability Reporting Standards and GRI, we need to get to a global baseline. So we've got common framework, but then we need to have common standards so that if you're reporting under ISSB, it's equivalent in ISSB plus GRI as reporting under the CSRD. Because in order to do, going back to the beginning of our conversation, for the sustainability issues to be incorporated in discussions with investors, both from an ESG and an impact point of view, you need to be able to compare apples to apples, regardless of the country that you're in and the reporting framework that's being used. And so that's the opportunity, but I think it's also the challenge.
Just something that, again, it's one of the bugbears that, and I've mentioned it with Bob before, is, you know, we're in this weird place where the world needs to act, and it's abundantly clear it's not acting enough. So people are tending not to go down the road of frameworks, because they're saying you can't give the wiggle room or make it voluntary. We have to make this mandatory and lead with the stick. And that's fine to a degree. It then means that you're potentially mobilizing an army of reporting and compliance people, but actually no one carrying out action. And then separate to that, what we have is certainly in Europe, this general sense of, you know, we won't get it right in day one, but we're on a journey. And I think that's great in terms of sentiment, but that's not what the assurance of our CSRD reporting is going to, our assurers won't accept, or anybody's assurers of their CSRD reporting is not going to accept if they sense that you tried your best or that you applied certain thresholds. So I think there's a bit of a reconciliation there between the call it framework, best efforts, might not get it right in day one approach, to the regulatory piece, backed up by the assurance piece, which says, no, you have to get it right on day one. I still think there's a bit of ambiguity in Europe on that. And certainly I'd like to think it'll be clarified pretty soon.
Yeah, I mean, certainly we're touching here on topics that have been coming up very frequently on podcasts at the moment. One, the interoperability topic is evergreen. We talk about that very often. But secondly, the difference in nature and how hard it is teams are finding to try and balance the need for compliance, like reporting against standards in line with assurance, with the desire to also address the impact side of the story and how to balance the resources that are needed, as well as the difference in approaches that I think you were just highlighting.
Well, and you also have the classic US versus Europe. I mean, Europe is much more prone to regulation. I think in some ways it's maybe going a little bit too far. In the US, you have this anti-ESG pushback. But as a practical matter, for the foreseeable future, ISSB reporting is going to be on a voluntary basis. I mean, the SEC is getting sued both on the right and on the left. And so I'm a big fan of kind of good faith voluntary reporting, you know, on the part of companies. And the US capital markets are the biggest. We have to be practical about that. And, you know, a huge percentage of the large listed companies. And so, and the big US companies are going to have to report according to the CSRD. But I think we need to be a little bit more positive about the advantages of voluntary reporting and some of the flexibility, as Garrett was indicating, because we really need the US kind of moving in the same direction as everybody else, but it's got to be on a voluntary basis.
I think we're starting to pull together some threads here. We've talked a lot about different frameworks that we have out there, voluntary reporting, moving to compliance, but we've also been talking about value creation, the role of the CFO and investors. And if we pull all that together, I think we kind of get to a point now where we can talk about another report that you have with, sorry, a statement you have within your sustainability report at Smurfit Kappa, Garrett, which is the Green Bond Allocation and Impact Report, discussing your company's green finance framework, which I think is bringing all of this together. So why was it crucial for you to align your funding strategy and your sustainability goals? And can you provide some examples of it fostering innovation maybe within the company?
Well, it's, again, it probably sounds cliched, but it's just part and parcel of how we operate. We make a sustainable product, we make it in an increasingly sustainable way, and we want it to be funded in a sustainable way. So we want sustainability basically to be throughout the business, whether you're looking at it from a funding capitalization perspective or from the product and the process perspective. The report itself, I guess, is in line with best practice. And it's third-party assured as well. So we want to make sure that we go to market. The first green bond we did, I think, was one of the lowest coupons for a company of our credit rating at the time. So again, building on where we've just come from in the conversation, there's a business case for it. And that's the part where sometimes when you kind of look at what's the difference between Europe and the US, or maybe how could we're looking at listing on the New York Stock Exchange in the next few months as part of a merger. And I guess how we think about it is you can be sustainable and make money, and it shouldn't be one or the other. So I guess that's how we've shown it in through our green bond financing. We recently did just under $3 billion. And very, very healthy appetite from both sides of the Atlantic. And we will continue to report our impact against that. So I think it's just reflecting how we see sustainability as just ingrained in the business. And I think also, as I said, from some examples, we've also had a business case for it. So getting a lower coupon, getting that appetite, that oversubscription when it comes to filling the book. So we've seen the upside by doing it. I'm not sure. I guess from an innovation perspective, it's probably just been that doggedness in that we've stuck with it and we've been rewarded for doing it. And we'll just continue to report on the positive impact that all those investments are making.
Try not to get that purpose and that business benefit lost in a compliance world happening at the same time. So we have a fantastically fun question to end this on with for Bob. So here's a good one. Are we in a new era of capitalism where sustainable finance is becoming the norm?
I think the answer to that is no. I don't think people really know what they mean about sustainable finance. I mean, it gets confused between ESG integration and exclusions and divestments. There's a confounding between ESG and impact and these funds that are being issued. That's what the SFDR, Sustainable Finance Disclosure Regulation, is trying to address. And that's a mess in a lot of ways, and they're rethinking about it. And so I think now is a good time. If you take sustainable finance, you take ESG, you take sustainability, In some ways, looking on the bright side, this pushback, I think, has been a good wake-up call, because I think there's been a lot of greenwashing in both the corporate and the investment community. But I think we all need to kind of step back and think about what we need to do to be more authentic, the kind of things that Garrett was talking about. So what I would like to say is that we're not entering into a new world of sustainable finance. I think we're entering into a new world as to how we think about how the capital markets function, where the sustainability information is being incorporated with the financial information, which we're able to do by having a set of standards and kind of get away from trying to market things through labels and think about capital allocation and how sustainability is related to financial performance. So it's maybe not the answer that you're looking for, but I think we're in an important transition in thinking about how all this works in the capital markets.
Okay, well, Garrett and Bob, thank you so much for joining us today. It's been fantastic recording with you both. Thank you for joining us for this episode of ESG Talk, brought to you by Workiva, the world's only unified platform for financial reporting, sustainability, audit, and risk. If you would like to learn more about the changing nature of the sustainability function inside companies, please listen to our episode from season 2 with Bob Eccles, Redefining the Role of the CSO. Also, check out the chat I hosted about the Task Force for Nature-Related Financial Disclosures last season, Understanding TNFD and TCFD Frameworks. In the meantime, if you enjoyed this episode, as always, please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts and subscribe to see future episodes on Apple, Spotify, or YouTube. We'll talk again soon.